Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother. Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reading from the Cross and Lotus Journal, September issue. There is nothing but name. Mother speaking, I want to talk to you tonight about the melody of God. There's a music without strings, and yet when you sing the name of God, it binds you with a chord that is the strongest chord that you can possibly imagine in this world. It is a chord which cannot be broken. It has no knots in it. It seems to have no beginning and no end. But it originates within the Spirit of God, and as He sends forth His own Spirit, and He enters into this garment of flesh, which each of us wears. The name is the light. It is the sound, which keeps us moving and living in this body, which He has given to us, which is the temple not made with hands. When you stop to think about it, it's a strange thing to think that sound, or word, rather, can produce light. We think of it certainly as being able to produce sound, but not necessarily light. And yet we have this electrical substance in this universe that is brought forth by this same Word of God. When you close the outer ear, in other words, when you go deep within your consciousness, as you lose track of all the things of the senses, when your concentration is so great that you totally involved with listening to this name of God that sings itself constantly within your own being, you go beyond time, space, the Word, the atom, every known human experience, and you find yourself one with God, one with His light, one with His sound, one with His glory, and you are filled with the bliss of His presence. These are not just words. Saints and sages have been speaking of this mystical experience down through the ages, and surely not all of them could say these things unless they were actually experienced. If you will read the stories of the lives of the great saints of the world, you will find that each and every one of them have had this sort of experience. This word is called by many names in accordance with the particular language, the particular religion. In India, it is called Ramnam. It is also called Om, which is the basis of all sound. Om, and yet is pronounced as though it were spelled O-M. That word, because of the fact that the world has been getting smaller all the time, has become a household word practically all over America today, where once it was totally unknown. Even in 50 years ago, this is so. I think that Master was one of the first to introduce it to this country. But today this word is indeed known, and there are many who are chanting Ramnam all over America, and it is a beautiful thing to listen to. This inner sound takes us on a journey. It's a most wonderful thing. We can chant the word Om, and it always has an elevating kind of effect. Whenever we chanted it here today as a group, we feel the power of it. It has a purifying effect. It makes us feel comforted. It lifts us up. All of these things are true. But there is so much more than the chanting of the word. When I first started chanting Ramnam, I was not used to speaking that much, and so I would sing the phrase a few times, and then it would internalize itself. Later on, I read where Papa said, that it's more powerful to chant it within the mind than it is through the voice. As you internalize it, the chanting becomes a vibration. You feel the vibration in your heart, in your soul, in the depths of your own being. And as a result of this chanting, this listening, this sense of vibration, the soul is lifted up. It is purified, perhaps not all at once, but it begins to get a sense of it. It gets a hit. And through that uplifted experience, you begin to take this great journey backward towards God. Everything in this world has a vibration. If we look at the atomic and subatomic levels, everything is in motion. And when you get down to things that are particles, perhaps, or just perhaps charges of electricity, it gets closer and closer to just pure vibration. Now, vibration is movement. And when we have that movement, we hear a melody and there is light. These two qualities go beyond the senses, go beyond what we can see with these eyes and what we can hear with these ears. It takes us into the depths of our own being, and there we have an intuitive faculty. Because this is little explored in human consciousness, it is oftentimes thought to be fantasy or imagination. And in truth, there are many times when people will proclaim that they are experiencing something of a supernatural origin. And in truth, they are really tapping into something within their own consciousness. Mind is very powerful. So if you precondition it with so many expectations and thoughts and ideas, you can manufacture experiences and think of them as being real. But when you get established in the deeper reality, it takes you far beyond the realm of imagination. You begin to recognize the difference between those things that you can produce with the mind and those things that come far beyond the mind. When you tap into that, it begins to transform you. One of the things that I think is noteworthy about many of the near-death experiences that have been reported, and sometimes scientists will try to explain it away as a variety of biochemical processes as the brain is dying. And so the light that is seen, the experiences that are had, are things that are all coming from the unconscious mind. The thing that really puts the fly in the ointment to that kind of theory, though, is the transformative aspect to these experiences. They are not nightmares, nor are they necessarily preconceptions. Many times people have no deep spiritual life before these experiences. And yet, the experiences they have in these near-death experiences, to my knowledge, always have a transformative effect. They change a person's course of life. And oftentimes, what they learn and what they see, what they experience in this near-death experience, goes against what they have oftentimes thought and believed. Now, when they come back, they will put a variety of names, that great being of light that reveals to them their previous life on earth here, they may label as Jesus or as Buddha or as Krishna, depending upon their origin of their existence in this lifetime. And therefore, when they come back, they assign it a variety of names. But that's unimportant. What we look at is the actual experience itself. And so individuals will go through this kind of an experience and they will come back profoundly changed. One thing is, universally, they do not fear death. In fact, the state of what we call death is much preferable in many cases to life. It's easier, it's more wonderful, it explains many of the mysteries, it opens up new worlds that are beautiful and wonderful. And there is a reticence to leave that place. And so they come back with a purpose. And that is the transformative part of the experience. They may value learning and education, loving other people, healing relationships, all of these things become profoundly important to them. And so they take it upon themselves to change the course of their lives, to change the course of their relationships, to learn more, to love more, to become more involved with those things that are deeply important that they have realized in this near-death experience. And so this is the universality of religious experience. It is a very narrow view when you say my religion is right and all others are wrong. And you may get down to my sect alone is right and all others are wrong. Or my way is right and all others are wrong. Anything that is produced by the mind will not be absolute truth. What we learn as we go deeper into the sound is that we are receivers, not producers, of light and sound. This pure vibration that has come out from the spiritual consciousness will have the same effect wherever you live in this world, whatever your background, whatever your culture. And so as you go deeper into this, you feel the profound changes happening within you if you are really following your path. If you are not, as Swami Satchitananda would say, more sadhana. You got to go deeper. You got to work harder at it. If you feel like you're just treading water, if you feel like you're just on the surface of things, that there's something greater, more, that you can experience, but it's not happening, you have to go to work on yourself. You have to chant the name. You have to spend the time in meditation. There's really no substitute to going deeper in meditation. Now, many people get frustrated as they try to meditate. The mind is so busy, so active. It is filled with activity. This is called rajasic. Rajasic is activity. And it swirls the mind around and around. And you get onto this merry-go-round of different thoughts and daydreams. And suddenly the time has passed and you realize you really haven't put your mind on God at all. And it's very frustrating. There are others who respond with a tamasic state. And tamasic is the depressive and the unconscious state. And so some people will have a great tendency to go to sleep or to just begin to kind of nod off and go into an unconscious state. I know some people who think of realization as becoming unconscious. They hear the concepts such as the ego must die and they think about it as somehow you become nothing. That is not the truth of it. And this is not what we should be seeking out for. When we go into God consciousness, we're going into the very source of life, the intelligence, the power, the beauty, the upliftment, everything that we associate with the divine is to be found within that. And so you are tapping into the greatest source this world has ever known and that you will ever know. And unless you are beginning to really have an experience in that, then you're not going deeper enough. Sri Yukteswar said that you may know God realization as ever new joy. Do you have that? Are you experiencing ever new joy? And if you are not and you find yourself sidetracked with just the everyday things of life, but that joy is not growing in you, you're not experiencing it as a product of your own consciousness in a constant basis, then you are not fully at the goal. And you must make more effort. This is an absolute truth if you expect to get what you want in this lifetime. We cannot just tread water and expect to cross the ocean. We must do our part. We must start to swim. We must do everything in our power to keep our mind upon God. Why? Because this puts us in the way of the spiritual vibration that will change us. I know somebody who's very interested in money and has been all of their life, and they wanted to make a lot of money. And so they said one of the things they did is they put themselves where people who had a lot of money were at, hoping a little bit of it would stick to him. Now, if we think about that same concept with God, if we are hanging out with God, that some of that God stuff, that upliftment, that joy will stick to us, that we'll be transformed by it. If we associate ourselves with those souls who are striving to uplift their consciousness, to get connected to this deep source of beauty and love and joy, then surely it will help to change us. Now, when we have a small tree or plant, we oftentimes put a fence around it. Now, this doesn't mean that the rest of the world is bad or anything else, but we want to protect our deep spiritual life. We don't want to just expose it to anybody and everybody. And we want to put those things around us that will support the growth until that tree has nurtured itself and broadened itself and become very firm in its rooting in this world. Then we may be able to mingle more with this world and a variety of people in this world. But it's an amazing thing how you can have an experience in God. You can have that upliftment, that peace, that joy. It feels so absolutely natural to you. You cannot imagine a time when it is not. And then suddenly, your consciousness is drawn back down into the old familiar ego consciousness. And it can be maddening when it happens, or it can just happen in a kind of unconscious way. And suddenly, you find yourself in a deep misery, not all at once perhaps, but gradually. And then you wonder, how in the world did that happen? Where did that all go to? Maybe it wasn't real. Maybe I was just in a deluded state, and this is reality. You see, that old familiarity of ego consciousness claims its property. Huh? It says, this is mine. This is mine. And it doesn't want to give up its hold. But you were born to find your spiritual freedom. And so if you really put your mind upon God and feel this vibration, you will feel the transformation that will happen as a result. To chant God's name, to find Him, always at the center of your consciousness, no matter whatever else you are doing, then you will find that. Now, we are on the eve of leaving for a wonderful pilgrimage. And so I wanted to read also from the journal about the Holy Himalayas. Up in the misty heights of the majestic Garhwal Himalayas that adorn the magnificent state of Uttaranchal awaits a rejuvenating spiritual experience for the devout. Nestling in the lofty peaks are the four most holy pilgrimages of India, Yamunotri, Gangotri, Kedarnath and Badrinath, collectively referred to as Char Dham, or four pilgrimage centers of Hinduism. For centuries, saints and pilgrims, in their search for the divine, have walked these mystic vales known in ancient Hindu scriptures as Kedarkhand. And so I feel a draw to come to these places. Each time that I've been up in the Himalayas, whether it's been Babaji's cave or up to Almora, up to some of the different sites, the ashrams that we've been to, it's had a wonderfully uplifting kind of thing happen while I've been there. It's difficult to describe in words, but anybody who's entered into a sacred arena, you feel the vibration, and you feel the difference in the atmosphere. It seems like the air itself is filled with that Om vibration. The mountains of North India seem to be filled with that vibration in themselves. Swami Muktananda told the story of a pilgrim that he met. He was a Westerner, this pilgrim was. He was walking upon the paths up there. He had very little. He just had a few clothes. He didn't wear any shoes. He didn't have a hat. And so Swami Muktananda was interested in him, so he talked to him and found out that he was a disciple of Satya Sai Baba. And Sai Baba had asked him to take this pilgrimage up in the north. Swami Muktananda, looking at his spare belongings, ask if he could get him anything. Could he buy something and that he needed for his journey? And he said, no. He said, how about some chapels? How about some shoes? You're not wearing any shoes. Surely that must be difficult on your feet. He says, you people of India, you have lived here all of your lives. I am just here for the first time. There have been so many saints and so many realized beings who have walked these paths. I don't want anything between my feet and the vibration of those saints that have trod these paths. Swami Muktananda was so thrilled to hear this kind of description. He didn't want to miss an ounce of the spiritual vibration and benefit that he could get from such a pilgrimage. And so when you go to pilgrimage spots, we should go with a devout attitude. We should go with the idea of what we can absorb and what can change our lives. Now, there are many pilgrimage spots, even here in North America and Europe and elsewhere, places where you can go. They may be natural sites. There are places that we discover within nature, within the forests, or out in the desert, and other places where we feel there is a natural, pure vibration. That vibration of Om is resonating through nature, through that spot. Perhaps there has been somebody in the ancient past who has meditated there or had some great spiritual experience there. Or perhaps it is just naturally endowed with a spiritual vibrancy. And so when we find these places, we value them because they help to change us. They help to transform us. They help to take us through that near-death experience that spiritual birth is all about, because in order to be spiritually reborn, we must die. Die to our ignorance, die to our old life, die to our attachment to how we think things ought to be. All of our preconceptions must be thrown into the ocean of infinite consciousness, because whatever we conceive in this mind is a fallacy ultimately. It falls short of absolute pure truth. There are some who doubt that there is absolute truth, that all truth is relative, but this is not so. And when you touch the hem of the fabric of truth, you recognize its profound influence upon you. And you realize that this has not been something manufactured by your own mind, but it's come from a great source, a perfect source, a pure source. And rather than having us try to figure out what truth is through our own mind and our own limited intellect, we seek to discover, to clear the mind of all the things that normally occupy it. We die to our old selves, so that we may be born anew into a divine being. This is the next evolutionary step. Now, if we look out into the world these days, we see that everybody is busy trying to claim their piece of the pie. And whether they have it or they want it, or they want it for somebody else, this focus upon the world is almost absolute. And yet, if you look throughout any church assembly or synagogue or temple, you will find there that there will be a few illumined souls. You will see something different about them. Their lights will be glowing. Their eyes will be sparkling. They are alive to a spiritual consciousness that most others are dead to. They are in truth being reborn. Now, we hear that much in modern-day Christianity, being born again. And it's oftentimes thought all you do is you go down to the front of the church and you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, and you are now born again. Well, this is a very simplistic kind of formula. And what we know is it's not true. All you have to do is look at the lives of those individuals. Now, they can have a wonderful, uplifting experience in doing this. But to be born again means you completely die to the old. In India, when you become a Swami, you let go of your past You let go of your family. You let go of any limiting thought. You are given a new name, and you renounce your old name. You are dead to the past. You are dead to the old, and you are reborn. Now, no simple formula can produce this effect. One time when I was driving up in Canada, and we were going by a field that was filled with pumpkins. It was about this time of year, fall time. And there's all these wonderful, bright, glowing pumpkins out in the field. And I looked at them, and I thought they looked like so many tiny flames out there in the field. And suddenly it dawned on me that this orange color of renunciation is really the fire of Kundalini that should be lit within the spine and the soul of the individual. That is the true meaning of the color orange. And it is a color of transformation. This internal fire that is produced by this divine energy of Om within transforms the entire being. It's an amazing process, really, because it begins to change you on a physical level. All the physical cells inside of you are stretched. They are put under an extreme amount of stress. And as a result of this purifying effect, the cells are renewed. You are born into a new body. As your entire nervous system and atomic structure begins to realign itself with the light rather than the ego mind. It also changes your electrical or your astral body. Now, this is a very subtle form of electricity. It's not the ordinary electricity that we see traveling through the lines, going through power lines to houses. This is a kind of electricity that can be sensed and seen with the intuition, but it is real. If you were to approach somebody and you are sensitive on the astral plane, you feel when somebody has entered into your space. That is the two electrical fields that are interacting with each other. And so you sense it, you feel it, and it may be a pleasurable experience or it may be a difficult experience depending on the level of vibration of the two people involved. And so this is an absolute reality, and this body too is absolutely changed through this Kundalini power. Now, how is this power released? It is a mystery, really, because for one individual, they will strive spiritually, and they will be working on themselves to spiritually transform themselves, and they have little or no experience in this way. And another individual may be a newcomer upon the path, and yet they are struck. They are struck powerfully and profoundly through this uplifting force. And it is not a joke. It is not something to be taken lightly. When Papa was traveling all over India, he was in a state of bliss. He was chanting God's name. Now, when he took to God's name finally, it was a powerful thing. He could not be dissuaded from it. And there are those who objected. There are those who worried. There are those who criticized. But he would not be dissuaded from this path. And so he chanted and chanted and chanted. He was now in an uplifted state of bliss. And he would meet different swamis, those who wore the orange. And they were not having any experiences of the kind. And they would ask him, why you and not me? And Papa would tell a little story about it. He says, well, it's like a child. And a child is in the middle of the room of adults. And he's got a small toy, and each one of the adults are focused on the child and saying, come, bring me the toy, bring me the toy. The child looks around and looks around. He doesn't deign to give it to any of them. Suddenly he runs out of the house, sees a complete stranger on the street, and gives him the toy. Papa would say, Ram Dass is like that. He was like the person running, walking along on the street. And suddenly God just gave it to him. He can't explain it. He can't say why. He was not particularly virtuous. He wasn't particularly spiritual. He was interested in it, surely. But he had other interests as well. But suddenly, it just took with him. And so, why one and not another? Jesus said, when the day of upliftment comes, that there will be two working the field. One will be taken and the other will be left. And he said, it's mysterious, like the wind. He says, the wind will be blowing. And suddenly it'll pick up and it'll be blowing from a direction, and then it'll just suddenly die down. How can you anticipate it? How can you know? You can't. All you do is you remain receptive. So Jesus told the story of the handmaidens, those that were asked to stay up and wait upon their Lord. And so some of them had filled their lamps, and they had waited. And there was others who had not filled their lamps, and they were slumbering, and they were sleeping, and they're distracted elsewhere. And when the master came, he found the ones who had kept their lamps full. And they were the ones who were ready. They were ready for that experience. They were attuned to it. They were looking for it. But those who had become completely distracted and looking the other way, they missed it. The master was there, passed right next to them. But they were unconscious of it. And therefore, they were not taken. So we must do our part. We must prepare ourselves for that great awakening, for that great union or yoga that comes through our spiritual union. We cannot control exactly when it's going to happen. Some people meditate a little bit and they say, well, this is no use. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not having these tremendous experiences that Mother or Master or David have described. I'm not getting anywhere, so they give up. They get discouraged. But the prize goes to the one who perseveres, who continues, even when things aren't smooth, even when they aren't easy. If you're familiar with investing kinds of strategies, there's a called a dollar cost averaging, and you just take something from your paycheck every week and you invest it. You make that part of your investment portfolio. And whether the stock market goes up or whether it goes down, you're always adding in every paycheck. You're putting something in. And over time, as the theory goes, your nest egg will grow. Now, there will be times when it will go down, as it has in recent times. But there will also be times when it will go up. And over time, there will be a gradual and steady rise. But if you're always looking every day and you're pulling out the financials and you're looking, oh, did I make any money today or did I lose any? Oh, look at it, it's going down. I better take money out. And then, oh, look, it's going up. I better put money in. So you invest when the dollar is low and you take it out as the dollar goes up and you lose money. We must be steady. It doesn't go to the one who just comes and sprouts up and gets a little bit of growth and then just fades away because there's not enough sufficient soil to support the plant. You must be steady in your growth. Now, going on pilgrimage is something in an outer sense that you do when you feel called to it, when you feel directed to do so. There's nothing particularly magical about pilgrimage other than God takes you around and he takes you to holy sites, and these can be greatly beneficial. But there are many people who come to holy sites and they don't get much, if any, benefit at all. And it's because they haven't come with the right attitude. It's not the right time for them. Actually, God exists right here, right now. This ground that we stand upon is holy ground. This place where we sit is sacred, and it has this vibration, this Om vibration, that manifests throughout all creation. And there's not a place you can go in this entire world that you will find that is absent once you are awakened to it. This is why Papa could say, the world is God. We look out through these two eyes, through the human sense of things, and we see good, but we also see bad. We see uplifting things, but we also see depressing things. That is looking through the human mind. But when you look out through God's eyes, You see that sacred vibration permeating all creation. And at whatever person you look at, or whatever situation you look at, when you look at it through the divine vision, you see only the sacred, only the divine. You feel that vibration. And when you see things that seem to run contrary to it, you know that it is the world working itself out. That no matter how much pain this world produces, and as it does produce pain, and it does produce pain, it is a purifying effect. It begins to cure us of this notion that this body and this life will provide the real truth, provide the real life that we are looking for in our deepest heart's nature. We all want life eternal. We all want bliss. We all want enlightenment and truth. But many have lost faith. They've lost any notion that those things really exist. So instead of perhaps a church service on Sunday, it's going to the football game. I know in my mother's congregation there's quite a character soul, and there is a big game on Sunday, and he really didn't want to miss it, but he didn't want to miss church, so he's listening to a radio and had a little earpiece in his ear. And it was a little embarrassing when a big play happened and he gave out a big shout. It wasn't the kind of church where people ordinarily shouting and raising their hands and praising the Lord. So everybody was startled and turned around and looked at him. That's where his heart lay. God bless him. He's a very sweet man, a very sweet soul. But really, if we knew what God really is, we would not even for a moment hesitate putting our whole attention, whatever, all the enthusiasm and all the energy and all the money that's spent on a stadium and people going to a game and all that focus on a Sunday, it pales into insignificance when we compare it to uplifting divine experience. This is the truth. It is the truth. And yet, do we hear it? Do we really comprehend it? We may hear the words and agree with it, but what really sets us apart when we know it is we put our whole attention upon it. We really strive for it. We don't settle for just a little cup from that ocean, but we want to dive into that ocean and to lose ourselves in that ocean. And as Mother said, as she dove into that ocean, that the salt doll that was herself dissolved into the sea. And she became absorbed into that sea. And then one day, as she was meditating, she felt herself above this earth, and she is looking down upon this earth. And she is thinking of all the suffering that humanity had, and how great the bliss and the light and the joy she was experiencing now in the state of realization. And she just felt that she had to come back to this earth to tell everyone that God is life and life is God. That this own vibration permeates throughout all creation. And to awake to that. In the Gita it says, arise, awake. It is the message that has been pouring out to all humanity for all these ages. And yet it is as if most all humanity is deaf and dumb to this wonderful message. So let us not count ourselves among that number. Let us really catch fire. If we find ourselves being mediocre, let us dig in. If we find that we have slipped, it is because we have not properly focused the mind and kept it that way. We have let it wander. Declare your freedom. Strive for it. And God's grace will come in, because it is only through that power. You can't make it happen yourself. But God's grace will come in and change you, and change your life forever. And I will guarantee you, you will never look back and wish that you had not done this. Because within that, you have your absolute freedom, bliss, and light. You have everything that your heart has ever desired. And you realize that this world is but a play. And we have our entrance and we have our exit. But really, in the realm of eternal life, it is a very short stay. We are all renters. We are not buyers here upon this earth. The only thing that you own permanently and is always yours and can never be taken away from you is your divine soul. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Ignorance can make its claim upon you. Ego can make its claim upon you. But it can never hold you. Not always. Only God has that power. Quote from Papa on the back page of the journal. It is difficult to know why God reveals himself to some and plays the game of hide-and-seek with others. It is his leela. He cannot be accused of favoring some and forsaking others. Let us all remember that he dwells in us and that we ever dwell in him. He who reveals himself to us is he. He who plays hide-and-seek with us is also he. Everything is he. Guru is he. Shishya is he. Player is he. Witness is he. Realize this great truth and rest happy. The secret here is that whatever your state of being, learn to recognize God within that state. Even if you're in a state of misery, that God has come to you for some mysterious reason to help to awaken you. Once you acknowledge and recognize the divine element within your life, then you will put into that vibration of Om, and that transformation will begin its process within you now. May you continue in his thought and his blessings and his peace. May you never abandon your search for the divine goal. May you find yourself floating in his ocean of joy, ever new joy, and light and peace, and your light completely and totally aligned with his. Om, Om.